and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to, hey, spring ball started. Let's talk about some Gopher football edition. Luke, how have things been for you? I think I look back, it's been like 6 weeks or so since we got on these airwaves and decided to talk a little bit of Gopher football. So how are things?
Things are good. It's really interesting to me that, you know, once PJ Fleck had his presser, like for spring ball, that is, that things started to warm up. Some pumps were just acting all crazy, like pushing out water these days. Lots of thaw going on. Must be time for some spring football.
Well, finally, now that it's over 40 degrees and we're not getting snowstorm after snowstorm after snowstorm, and now our roads, at least here in Northeast Minneapolis, have turned into an absolute pond no matter where you go. Like, if you try to go down my street right now, Luke, literally there is like a tire groove of ice for one lane because we have Minneapolis parking restrictions right now, which are the woat, by the way. And if you try to like turn out of them, you will slip and slide back into them until you give it enough gas. And it is just an absolute nightmare.
Oh, man. All right. Well, yeah, as we look towards spring, what might be real spring, we're here stuck in this purgatory, you know, that is a wintry mix or a thawing mix, maybe for lack of a better term. But I think what we really got to get into, we can kind of close the book on the 2018 season, as I think most people would be kind of interested. I know they've probably heard a little bit about the NFL Combine, but let's put that 2018 season and tie it up in a bow before we get to spring practice. I'm not a huge NFL Combine guy, but rumor has it, and Twitter was all a flutter with some love for Blake Cashman, and probably rightfully so.
It was funny to watch the day after, or like hours afterwards, where Blake Cashman tested. So Gopher linebacker Blake Cashman, walk-on star, earns a scholarship, starting linebacker, ends up running a 4.50 40, 37-inch vert, 6.95 three cone, and a 10-foot-4 broad jump. Now, all of that may go over probably some of your heads. What does that mean? It just means that Blake Cashman, he's really athletic. And so it was funny to watch like NFL draft Twitter go into a buzz when Cashman runs a 4.50, of which, by the way, I think it's funny. Like, I wasn't expecting that Blake Cashman was going to run faster than Damian Wilson or Devondre Campbell when he started his Gopher career. Like, the first time I remember Blake Cashman, when it was his true freshman year at a fall camp practice, there's this 6'2", 230-pound kid working with the safeties. And I'm looking at Jay Sauvel, and he's looking at me, and we're like, you're not going to be here very long, young man. Yeah. He wanted to come in and play safety, ends up going to linebacker, has a fantastic finish to his sophomore year. Rob Smith can't figure out how to utilize him in 2017, and then Rob Smith finally kind of figures it out, gets fired, and then Joe Rossi actually figures it back out, and Cashman ends his career playing with his hair on fire. So the rumor is that Blake Cashman has been contacted by 26 different NFL teams, or he met with 26 different NFL teams at the NFL Combine. And now he's trying to set up visits in terms of where he's going to go visit beforehand. Basically, all of that doesn't really mean anything. Just because you didn't go visit with a team doesn't mean they're not going to take you. It happens all the time.
Right.
But the question is, where does Blake Cashman go? I think if you're on the optimistic end of the projection, you're thinking day two, which would be you'd be a top 100 guy, second round, third round. I don't think he gets out of the fourth or fifth from the people I've talked to. Now, I think the other funny thing is, like, Luke, if you think of a white walk-on, what do you think of?
I think of probably an offensive lineman, a really skinny and or short wide receiver, or a kicker.
The wavelength I was trying to go down there is what kind of characteristics would people use to describe him in terms of he's gritty, first in, last out. He's like a coach on the field.
Probably A.J. Barker. Oh, wait, that didn't
Did you
fit?
See the A.J. Barker discussion that was on Gopher Illustrated this week, by the way?
No, I didn't, but I now have to go check that out. So.
Oh, that was funny, talking about the Gopher wide receiver room. The funny thing about it is, like, you're seeing people say, like, Blake Cashman's like a coach on the field. Now, that couldn't – how do I want to phrase this? So Blake Cashman isn't the smartest guy on the field, but when Blake Cashman doesn't have a lot on his plate and you ask him to do one or two things, we talked about this throughout the 2018 season, the man is a heat-seeking missile. So when you look at what he is in the NFL, just have him be, first of all, he's going to be a stud special teamer because that's how he made his hay. So he made his hay throughout his entire Gopher career. And now when you get to the NFL, you don't have to teach a guy how to play special teams. He's not walking in saying, well, I was a 3-year starter, didn't have to play special teams. I don't know anything's about. Cashman's well accustomed to that. And then again, if you just give him a little bit, just read this or read that.
Right.
He's going to be a pretty good NFL player.
I think one thing that I always attribute to guys that succeed in special teams, and I think this is just saying what you said a different way, is he's a very instinctual player, right?
Yes.
And to that end, that can get you pretty far, and then you couple it with, you know, some pretty good numbers. I think I'm by no stretch of the imagination an NFL genius, and nor do I follow NFL recruiting. I barely follow college football recruiting, but I got to imagine that GMs and scouts are, you know, real excited about the potential that he has.
Exactly. So good things for Minnesota there in terms of they're going to have somebody drafted this year. You know, if I were to be a betting man of Butch Luke, you know, I absolutely I'd say late day two. I mean, from what I've been told by NFL draft Twitter, his linebacker class isn't great. So if you're looking for like a third round pick who you know is going to have a high floor in terms of worst case, he's going to be a special team stud for you. And then in best case, he's also going to be a productive guy on the field for you early on. I think that's where Blake Cashman could potentially fit.
All right, let's look at like a Donnell Green. He's another guy that, you know, has been flagged as a potential draft pick. I don't believe he did much at the combine, correct? I think he got an invite, which is big, but yes. I don't think he did much.
Yeah, he got measured and everything. I think he was like 6'5", like 340. I don't know if 340.
That's a big boy.
I don't know if 340 was the weight he should have came in at. I think he played this season at about 325. So adding 15 pounds since the, again, we'll see how it ends up mattering. But I think the big thing from what you take away is Donald Green's arms were measured. He had 35-inch arms. He had the longest wingspan of anyone there at the NFL Combine in terms of offensive linemen. So you talk about especially an offensive line position in the NFL that has been severely depleted. I don't have to tell any Viking fan that. Well, you look at a guy with very long arms being able to combat those rushers, that's where you can see him playing tackle. So he did not test otherwise. I believe he's dealing with an injury. The hope is that he's going to be running and doing all those different sorts of things at Minnesota's pro day. But yes, the only thing he did was just kind of come in, did interviews, he did all that stuff behind the scenes, but he did not take part on the field.
All right, so Minnesota pro day will be coming up. There will be a number of more players that will probably participate in that. How many have realistic shots at the NFL? I have no clue. But I imagine... I don't know. Is there anybody else on your radar that has a chance to maybe make a practice squad or, you know, get a sniff?
Well, O.J. Smith thinks that he should forego his final year of eligibility.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that.
You know, he's one concussion away from potentially, you know, having some serious life implications, and he's deciding that he wants to try that at the NFL. I don't foresee him. I don't really see any other goal for getting drafted. You know, maybe a guy like Emmett Carpenter can make a camp as a kicker, considering all the kicking woes that are across the National Football League. I really don't see it potentially otherwise. I know that the Huff brothers are going to be there trying to do their best to get on a practice squad maybe, but...
So then last question about kind of NFL type stuff. There's this, what is this, the AA or the AFL or whatever this new Pro Football League is. Will they also scout these pro days? Do you know?
They will. Yeah. And so if you're looking for, you know, can they make the, what is it? The AAFL? Whatever the spring football league is where Andrew Stelter's in it. A couple of other Gophers are in it as
Phillip
well.
Phillip Nelson.
I've seen a couple of Twitter clips and Phillip Nelson after his freshman year, I still think he hasn't gotten a whole lot better, but they can go play in that. And from there, the NFL can take them from there, kind of the minor league system-ish. But NFL-wise, I'm putting essentially all my chips in on Blake Cashman or Donald Green.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the staff. I know that we touched on this because they filled out the staff the last time we talked. That was probably, like you said, 6 weeks ago. But there has been some title changes. We know that Shiraka got a bump in terms of compensation, but I can see here, you know, that Kenny Burns is now the assistant head coach. That was a position that was filled by a defensive backs coach before he went to Texas A&M, whose name is escaping me now.
Mo Lindquist.
Brian Callahan moves to run game coordinator. Matt Simon goes to pass game coordinator. I don't know that this should be a huge surprise to many folks, right? Kenny Burns is a guy that was flagged to potentially be a head coach at the FC, I believe the FCS level, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Indiana State. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's probably not a huge surprise that he gets a bump there in terms of a title. I don't know if it comes with compensation. But, you know, both Matt Simon and Callahan, you know, getting kind of coordinator titles probably is no big surprise given, you know, the rumors of swirl that were Shiraka leaving to go back to the homeland.
Yeah. I think that puts it pretty well in terms of running back coach Kenny Burns, now the assistant head coach. He was someone that declined the Indiana State job, which is, I think, in the best FCS conference in Missouri Valley, same one that North Dakota State is in. Brian Callahan, I think, did wonders with that offensive line last year. You want to make sure that he stays happy. You give him the run game coordinator. And then Matt Simon, for the second straight year, turned down opportunities elsewhere, both in the Power 5 ranks, and I know that he was getting some looks from the NFL as well. And so you look at life after Kirk Shiraka, and I talked about this last podcast, where Kirk Shiraka ain't going to be here forever. I mean, there's a reason, you know, there's a reason that Auburn has been interested in him and he's given them, you know, a fair shot. There's a reason that West Virginia was interested in him. He gave them a fair shot. You know, he's got kids both now in college, both on the East Coast. He's from Pennsylvania himself. The wife is from Pennsylvania himself. I think that Kirk Shiraka is here for a couple more years, and then he ends up going back out east to be closer to family. So what does that mean? Well, PJ Flex, well aware of my theory, and you got to keep potentially the three guys that would succeed him, Kenny Burns, Brian Callahan, and Matt Simon, got to keep them happy. Mm-hmm. And so I would think the most likely of those three to potentially be an offensive coordinator, if you're going in-house of those three options and not counting in Clay Patterson, would be Matt Simon. That's what I've been told by some people close to the Minnesota football staff, is that Matt Simon would potentially be the one to get the nod from Shiraka that, hey, if you want to go in-house, this is who I would do it with. Simon's been with you forever. He's been with me forever. He knows how we do it. And so if Minnesota's offense is going to continue over the next couple of years here to continue to improve year after year, you're kind of probably want to have something resembling, you know, consistency. And the same message, the same kind of principles, so that you don't have to bring in an outside guy, break everything down to rebuild it up. So all this really means is everybody gets, or those three guys anyway, get a different title along with their running back, wide receiver, and offensive line coaching jobs. I don't believe the pay increase would be much, if anything.
Sure.
Like, if anything, it's like $10,000, $15,000. Now, to you and me, Luke, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But to men that are already making, you know, $200,000, $300,000, it's not a whole heck of a lot. So I think, again, what you should take from this, Kirk Shiraka is not going to be here forever, and so PJ Flex making sure he's taking care of his guys.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think the only thing I'm curious about when it comes to, you know, run game, pass game coordinator, I believe there was at one point, like, in I think it was the Jerry Kill regime. I'm trying to remember right
now. Three different guys calling plays.
Yeah, and they were trying to
find Matt Limegrover, Jerry. No, it was Matt Limegrover, Jim Zabrowski.
Yes, that's what it is.
And then who's the offensive coordinator? So
Matt Limegrover was the offensive coordinator, but didn't Kill have like final say or something? I don't know.
Yeah, it was something. It was really a weird relationship.
But like, that's not happening here, right? Like, this is still Shiraka's show.
This is We're not going to have a Michigan debacle where three different guys are trying to figure it out, and then no one realized the clock is running. So when we run three shifts in a motion, it doesn't go well. So yes, from what I've been told, this is still the Shiraka show, and essentially, you know, Callahan, Callahan and Simon are going to get a little bit more say in game planning, but this isn't come Saturday. We have three different guys on a headset trying to figure out the plays. It's still Shiraka's show.
Yeah, do we need to trademark this is Shiraka's show and, you know, with some funky spelling, and then, you know, when he goes to Auburn or wherever it is next, you know, maybe a couple of years down the road, like, and they want to make cool T-shirts after they, you know, score 60 points a game, like, we're going to get compensated?
I think that you just figured out a very good patent idea, Luke.
All right, so we'll work on the trademark after that. So nobody can take that. We said it here first. all right, let's delve into some recruiting. This is obviously your wheelhouse. If people want to check out your work and get the inside scoop on what is recruiting, you all need to go to gopherillustrated.com. Not only is there football recruiting coverage and just football coverage in general, there's also basketball recruiting and basketball coverage. So I highly recommend that you guys check that out at gopherillustrated.com. I know that they did bring in a 2020 commit, Ryan, a guy by the name of CJ West, who's a defensive tackle. What can you tell us about him?
CJ Smith was one that...
Is it Smith, you know, or West? I have West written down.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know why. CJ Smith's currently on the roster playing defensive back.
Okay.
CJ West is from LaGrange Park, Illinois. He is a big, big boy. He is, I believe, all of 6'2", 310-pound defensive tackle. Someone that Minnesota wanted to bring up early on. Someone that they brought in on February the 28th up for an unofficial visit. He had not been offered yet. He'd been arguably one of the hottest in terms of recruitment profiles in the Midwest that month. In terms of in February, he'd picked up 10 different offers. Now, none of them at the Power 5 level yet, but he was scheduled to go. So his visit tour would have been, I think, Minnesota, Iowa, and Iowa State. And Minnesota got him on campus first. They verified that he's actually 6'2". They liked his tape. Panagos, the new defensive line coach, thought some very good things about him. I know that from talking with some people on the Gopher staff, they think that he is the most powerful defensive tackle in the Midwest this year. So when they got him on campus, verified that the size was legit, 6'2", 305, and they were like, we're going to offer you. Well, they did a good enough job on the visit where he pulled the trigger immediately and didn't go on any more visits. So
brilliant.
Minnesota has three commits now in the class, Jonathan Mann from Rosemount, the wide receiver, and Aaron Witt from Winona, the strong side. Defensive end at 6'5", 230 pounds are also still in the class. And so Minnesota's still bringing some guys in. I mean, as we record this, they have a couple of top targets on campus right now. I wouldn't be surprised by the time folks are listening to this if Minnesota's added another one to the boat. If you want to know who that is and what I'm talking about, you can head to gopherillustrated.com. And again, it's been busy. Now that spring ball is upon us, now that spring ball started this week, the staff is really pushing hard to really get kids in to see practice, to visit, see what it's all about. Kind of the complete package there. So we'll have to see, especially now that they just had a quarterback on campus. I just put on Gopher Illustrated today. They're going to have another offered quarterback on campus here by the end of the month. It's going to start to get pretty interesting here pretty quick.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, well, one, I want to say, I want to get your opinion. Jonathan Mann, he's been committed quite a while, but he's one of the higher, you know, sought after recruits in the state, right? And does his committing so early, you know, diminish his perceived value in the market?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just because everybody wants the latest and greatest.
Right.
And, okay, well, Jonathan Mann's been committed for damn near a year already. Aaron Witt's been committed for half a year. And so, I mean, we're not talking about Jonathan Mann a whole lot just because, I mean, he's been committed for so long. And people forget that he had, I think, you know, when he was a sophomore, he got all this attention. Iowa had offered, Arkansas had offered, a sophomore in Minnesota receiver. And again, people forget about him now.
Yeah.
I mean, Jonathan Mann is raw. I mean, I'm not going to dispute that. I've seen him plenty of times. But what he is, he's very athletic and he's 6'2" and he knows how to go up and get the ball. Now, rut running and stuff, that'll come.
Right.
And that's why Matt Simon, that's why PJ Flecker here, that's their job. But absolutely, Luke, people forget that Jonathan Mann and Aaron Witt are still here now. Three commits in mid-March to start. We'll see where they're at come May. But I would imagine there's going to be some names that are going to be joining these few very quickly.
So, okay, the big reason I ask that is, you know, I do frequent your message board. I am a user. Many people have wondered if that's actually possible. I know I post very little. I'm sorry. but I'm there. But I did note as I was lurking that there are some, you know, wide concerns about a Craig McDonald going to Iowa State, right? This is a Minnehaha product. You know, part of that, let's say, Jalen Suggs, Johnson, etc. class that a lot of people, you know, that's really the focus right now for in-state recruiting for a lot of folks. And there is some concern over that. Now, I get the perception, and you know, why did this happen? And there's concern, you know, can PJ keep guys home? But I did bring up Manns because I want to highlight, like, don't forget, guys, there's a pretty darn good two players that have already committed for a long time that kind of lose their perceived value over time. I get that they lost out on McDonald, but don't forget about some of these guys he has secured.
Yes, I think the long answer is, you know, was Craig McDonald somebody that PJ Fleck wanted? Yes, he was. Craig McDonald was on campus twice in the last 3 weeks, I believe, and then he went to Iowa State and he committed. And so it is what it is in terms of Minnesota. I don't think necessarily played their hand great. Craig McDonald was offered by Iowa State April last year, and then he came to camp in June, and I remember him tearing it up. I mean, he was doing very – he tested well during individual. He did well, yet Minnesota didn't offer him until 4 or 5 months later, and that kind of stung to him. Whereas Iowa State pulled the trigger on him first. They had been recruiting him hard for many months. When Minnesota finally moved on McDonald, I believe it was in October, Iowa State already had a six-month head start. And by then, yeah, you want to stay close to home, but Ames, Iowa is only, was it 3.5 hours away?
Yeah.
So it's, well, when you look at the win loss records too, Matt Campbell's won 8 games back to back years. Mm-hmm. So does 1-5-7. So this is a place where PJ Fleck necessarily didn't play it as well. Now, Luke, you and I have some different opinions about the basketball side of things, where I think energy and effort in recruiting can be questioned quite a bit. This isn't an energy and effort thing with PJ Fleck. This is one where they didn't play it correctly. And they lost out on it. So it is what it is. So,
yeah, but I don't think that the sky and falling mentality needs to really, the alarms need to be rung yet. I think that there is a valid concern that, you know, when it comes to really high end talent, PJ hasn't been able to keep him home. That's probably worth its own podcast in general. But
probably.
But that said, like, I'm not ready to say he can't keep him home. I think that in recruiting, relationships matter, and they're built over time. I know football is way different than basketball in terms of the duration of which you build the relationship, right? So maybe PJ deserves a little bit more flack than he gets. I know Patino definitely deserves some flack. We really shouldn't compare them because they're apples and oranges in terms of strategy, but I get your point from a energy effort, but I do believe PJ deserves a little flack. But that, all that said, I know that was a rambling mess. Thank you all for making it this far. what I will say is that the sky is not falling just because Craig McDonald committed to Iowa State. I still think that they probably have pretty good chance when it comes to securing in-state talent. And keep in mind, it's college, right? Some people just want to go somewhere else, and I can't blame them for that.
No, it is interesting. You look at the top 7 kids in Minnesota for 2020, according to 247. Now, Aiden Bauman being above Jonathan Mann and Aaron Witt is not something I agree with, especially because I've got my own evaluation of him. I've heard from some different college coaches their evaluation of him. Now, is Aiden Bauman a good quarterback? Yes. Should he be rated above Jacob Clark? No, not to me. Not to me. So PJ Fleck still has 2 of the top 5 kids in the state locked down.
Right.
And now it's going to be, what do you do with Kane Johnson? Because from what I've been told, Minnesota's not the leader there right now. And some other Minnesota's rivals in terms of Iowa and Wisconsin may be sitting a little bit better. Now, Minnesota's had Kane Johnson on campus twice in the last 3 weeks. He's supposed to come back at the end of the month with his family. So there's Minnesota's still putting in a ton of effort there, and they're still trying to make sure that he doesn't go join Craig at Iowa State. The whole Jalen Suggs thing Luke, that's a whole different podcast in terms of, I think you're, people are insane if you think Jalen Suggs is going to turn down being a top five basketball player in the country to play football, but here nor there. So long way about it is sky's not falling. PJ Fleck is still bringing in good recruits. He's still getting them on campus. Now it's about, can he start to close?
All right. So I'll give you a final word when it comes to recruiting. If you want to talk about any specific visits, I would probably say that most people should just check out Gopher Illustrated. I mean, that's really what pays your bills. You know, I was working on our taxes today, and this really doesn't pay your bills. I know that for a fact.
No, it does not. Whereas Gopher Illustrated significantly helps me. So you look at some of the names that Minnesota's brought in this week. I already have a story up with Will Howard, a quarterback from Pennsylvania that Minnesota brought in. They've already offered him. Kirk Shiraka went and saw him throw in January, someone that they're very interested in. Xavier Watts is a four-star from Nebraska, someone that Minnesota's been on for a long time. PJ Fleck went and saw him in January, stopped by the high school. There's a family connection to Jeff Jones, and a blast from the past there. I believe that Xavier Watts is Jeff Jones's cousin. So if you think that things kind of come full circle, I think that Xavier Watts relationship there is going to be one interesting to watch. And then today we have Kai Thomas, a four-star running back in from Topeka, Kansas, and then a 2020 Texas offensive lineman by the name of Casey Collier, someone that I'm going to be very interested to see what Minnesota does here on his visit. There'll be some other names coming in here, but to get those names, might as well head on over to Gopher Illustrated. We do have a new thing with the 247 product for those of you, especially with spring ball starting tomorrow, in terms of with you being able to go and watch practice. Well, you can't go watch practice. Well, how can you get your fix? Well, it's a good thing I'll be there taking picture, video, and I can assure you my practice notes are absurdly detailed for no reason. Like, I will go off 2,000 words about this Gopher football team, and if that interests you, I believe if you join monthly now, it's just your first month is $1 for everybody. There's no promo code, nothing like that. So if you want to get your practice report, video, photo fix, I think it'd be a pretty good time to join Gopher Illustrated.
So I imagine that you'll actually be there tomorrow. The first open practice opens at 4:45. That probably really means that it really starts at probably like 4:15 or 4:30 for those that want to go and see it publicly. But from what I can see from the notes here, you'll enter the practice facility, right? Like the big doors, like the main entrance, and then you'll head to the football complex. Is that how that's going to work, Ryan?
Yeah. So for those of you who are going to the Friday open practice, March 15th, 4:45 PM, it's at the new indoor. It is the indoor one. So if you're wondering, is Minnesota just going to put us all outside in 35 degree weather with snow everywhere? No, it's inside. So what I would recommend doing is probably getting there around 4:30 or so. There is going to be a line at the door outside. Then you'll be able to stand on the sidelines and watch, but it is at the new indoor facility there in the Athletes Village.
All right. So then other open practices that I can see listed are March 26th, again, 4:45, April 2nd, also 4:45. So if you're interested in checking any of that out, and then the spring game is April 13th. I don't have a time on that. Do they have a time yet?
It's 11 a.m. Nothing like an 11 a.m. spring game. Let's just hope it's above 45 degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get into let's talk about offense first. So looking at offense, I think where everybody's focus probably goes to immediately is quarterback, right? This is a position that was basically split first half, second half of the year, Anixtead Morgan. Now you bring in a fairly high profile recruit in Jacob Clark. You also bring in, the freshman from Eden Prairie. I mean, there's more talent, scholarship talent, than we've had in years at the quarterback position. So it'll be an interesting and fun ride, I have to imagine.
It is going to be a little interesting. Now, on this podcast, just so folks know, we're just going to talk about the offense, kind of where things are at going into spring ball. In a couple weeks, we'll revisit things with the defensive side of things. But quarterback. And you mentioned now that Minnesota has four scholarship quarterbacks instead of one that they were at 2018. That means Zach Anixtead, he's on scholarship now in January. And they also brought in early enrollees Jacob Clark and the Eden Prairie's Cole Kramer. So all four of them are going to be at practice tomorrow. When you're there, you'll be able to see each one of them, and I can guarantee the comment you're going to be is, wow, I'm surprised that Cole Kramer isn't 4'2", 100 pounds, considering everybody thinks Cole Kramer's just a little pipsqueak. But that's a different tangent that I want to go off on the Gopher Illustrated people. So I think where this needs to start in terms of this discussion is, I don't think that Jacob Clark off the rip is going to be a serious contender. Now, I say that, and what I mean by that is both Tanner Morgan, Zach Anixter, they started 6-plus games for Minnesota in 2018, and they are actually talented quarterbacks compared to what Zach Anixter walked into last year, where it was essentially him versus Vic Biramontes, who's now a scholarship linebacker at UNLV, and Tanner Morgan hadn't played a snap yet. So Minnesota's got some talented guys ahead of Jacob Clark. And while I wouldn't rule out that Jacob Clark has a kind of ascension that you saw from Zach Anixter last year, I'm not necessarily counting on it, just because I know that there's folks inside the Gopher football offices that are kind of putting this right now, as we stand here on March the 14th, that Tanner Morgan and Zach Anixter are going to get a majority of the reps with the ones. Whereas last year it was a 33-33-33 split between Biramontes, Morgan, and Anixter, where I think probably this spring it's 45-45-10 with Anixter and Morgan getting the 45s. So I just think that where you start right now is, I still think Zach Anixter has to be considered the 55-45 favorite right now. Now, I don't know that's necessarily going to be reflected in the reps that you're going to see this spring. And I think we learned from last spring, I don't know that the reps necessarily mean a whole lot. But Zach Anixter, folks have to remember that he literally won this race in fall camp last year. Then he got injured against Miami of Ohio. Was it Miami of Ohio or Fresno State? Where he turned his ankle.
I think it was Ohio, and he played, and then he basically played broken for a good portion of that with what I would say is an arguably, and probably statistically, I don't have it in front of me, much weaker offensive line than what Morgan got to experience.
Yeah, Tanner Morgan got Daniel Faalele, and Zach Anixter got Sam Schluter. A little bit different in terms of their performance last year. Now let's hope Sam can get 100% healthy and provide some value for Minnesota this fall. But that offensive line was a little different. And Zach Anixter turns that ankle, I believe, against Miami of Ohio, kind of plays through it. His mobility is clearly limited. And then in the Nebraska game, he gets concussed. He gets some mysterious midsection internal injury that literally caused him at halftime in Lincoln, Nebraska, to go to the emergency room. From there, Tanner Morgan took over. Even when Anixter got healthy, I will say that Tanner Morgan remained the starter. That was an interesting point behind the scenes, just because I know that Zach Anixter was very, very close to starting towards the latter end, those final couple of games last year that Minnesota almost went back to him. But I guess the point remains that they didn't, and Tanner was able to game manage those games to where Minnesota was able to come back and win there. So I think this is a Morgan versus Anixter race to start. I don't know if that's necessarily a popular opinion, but I think as we stand here today, that's the accurate opinion.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, too, I'm curious how – I don't know a lot about Clark. I think he's more of a pocket passer. I know he's like 6'5". He's a tall drink of water. But when you look at, like, Kramer, I know that it's been hotly debated, what his true size really is. But, you know, there are some people saying, like, he's probably better served as a safety, you know, given his speed, et cetera. I wouldn't count him out. And I know you're still pretty high on Cole Kramer.
When Cole Kramer started getting recruited by Minnesota, I didn't think I was going to be the guy somehow dying on the Cole Kramer hill. But I just think that Cole Kramer, if worst case, he is the best practice squad quarterback you're going to have for the next 4 years. And that, trust me, there have been some bad practice squad quarterbacks that have been here in this decade. And where you look at these two freshman quarterbacks this spring. Now, I think everybody going to watch Jacob Clark and even Cole Kramer this spring, you have to keep expectations low, because these are 18-year-old kids who still should be in high school that are going to go through a lot of growing pains this spring trying to learn a Big Ten offense. Now, Jacob Clark's going to obviously have the edge coming from a program in Texas and Rockwall that actually ran an offense from the modern century whereas Cole Kramer is coming from where the steam engine was the modern, you know, kind of thing of a, of.
Basically, Luke. they're running the wing tee.
One's from the 2000s, one's from the 1930s. We don't have a steamboat coming up to Mississippi here trying to go to the flour mill. Cole Kramer is going to take some time. Cole Kramer is very athletic. 6'1", 185 pounds, runs a 4.5. I think his arm strength has come leaps and bounds from when Minnesota first started recruiting him. But I also think that him trying to learn a Big Ten offense, going against caliber of players that he's going to go against that aren't going to be – this isn't Egan's defense. This is going to be a defense that actually has legitimate speed on the outside, up the middle. So it's going to take him a little bit of time where I think Jacob Clark's mental processing in terms of this offense isn't going to be as tough to learn for him. Now, every kid is different. Maybe Cole Kramer picks it up so quickly that he forces his way in, but I do think that Jacob Clark's going to have the edge. And I don't know that necessarily Cole Kramer is going to get a ton of actual reps. I think he's going to get a ton of mental reps this spring. But it's going to be interesting to kind of follow the progression of Jacob Clark, because last year at this time, you watch spring ball, you go to these practices, you could see that Zach Anixter was making some throws. And you were thinking, okay, maybe he's putting some pressure on the neck of Vic Viramontes to kind of, hey, you're supposed to be the guy here to kind of come in and do things. Well, you better start doing it. And then we all evidently saw in the spring game that the pressure kind of got to Mr. Viramontes. He ends up transferring out. He had like three fumbles on four snaps.
Yeah.
Something absurd where Anixter looked poised, calm, and collected in the spring game. So it is going to be very interesting to follow the progress of both these guys, Cole Kramer and Jake Clark.
All right, let's talk a little bit of running back. Obviously, folks are going to be focused on, you know, Smith and Brooks, likely, probably still rehabbing, aren't going to participate. I know they're bringing in another running back that's coming off injury as well. But you know what can we expect? Who's going to get a bulk of the run here? Of the maybe you know some younger guys and good for them, they'll get some good run.
They will. They certainly will. And so when you look at running back this spring, I would not expect you see Rodney Smith or Shannon Brooks get a single rep. They are still coming back from the rehab. PJ Fleck said in his opening press conference that Rodney Smith is ahead of Shannon Brooks right now. And for those of you that are kind of nervous about that, don't be. Remember that Rodney tore his ACL a month before. I think it was roughly a month before Shannon Brooks did. So he's got the surgery a month before. He's ahead by a month. They are both hopefully going to be 100% come fall ball. And even then, Minnesota knows what they have in both Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith. They're two tremendous running backs. I think you're going to see them take it easy on them in fall ball and then kind of get them ready to get to where come the fall. I think both are 12 to 15 touch guys with Mo Ibrahim potentially coming in there for 6 to 10. Now I know for whatever ungodly reason, that is an unpopular opinion, but I also think this spring, Luke, I wouldn't be surprised to see Mo Ibrahim get rested. Now I'm not saying every practice he's not going to get reps, but I'm thinking, you know, from the people I've talked to anyway, it wouldn't be a surprise for me at all to see Mo Ibrahim gets the starting reps, does a series or two, but then they rest him. Well, you're thinking, why the heck would they do that? He was a freshman. Yeah, he had that great season, 1,100 yards in 10 games. Well, they also have to have him be the spare to the pair. Your pair of running backs, both are coming off ACL tears. Both now have multiple ACL tears on their knees. Yes, they're very productive when they're healthy, but your spare needs to be ready to go. So they're going to kind of wean him off.
Right.
So what does that mean? Luke, that means you're going to see a steady dose of three running backs, all of them underclassmen and one from the state of Minnesota here. I think everyone is going to get a good, long, hard look at Nolan Edmonds, who was redshirted this past year, Bryce Williams, who was forced into game action last year when both Brooks and Smith had to go down with injury. And then, oh, by the way, Mr. Football from 2018, Jason Williamson, arguably the most productive running back in Minnesota State high school state football history, is also going to get his shot at running back. Especially, I don't think things could have worked out any better for Jason Williamson in this instance, where he really wants to prove that he's a running back. Now, Minnesota still isn't sure if he's a running back, receiver, linebacker, safety, but he's going to get his shot at running back. Minnesota doesn't have a ton of bodies there, especially with Trey Potts Another early enrollee from Minnesota at running back. He tore his ACL in October of last year, so he's still rehabbing, coming back from that as well. You have three of your seven running backs are all rehabbing from ACL tears. Well, you're going to get a long, hard look at what Jason Williamson can do when he's going against actual Big Ten athletes. So synopsis, Luke, is Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, they're just going to be rehabbing while you're there. Mo Ibrahim probably gets a series or two each practice. Minnesota knows what they have in him, and that's a very good inside zone runner. And then with that, it's time to see what you have in Bryce Williams with 6 months in the weight room. Time to see what you have with Nolan Edmonds after a redshirt year. And then what can Jason Williamson do right off the bat?
All right, so wide receiver was a much improved position group last year. No doubt about it. It couldn't have been a bigger turnaround, I guess, for a group. Tyler Johnson comes back for this senior campaign. So we've got a lot to look forward to there. But I don't know, man. A lot of these guys like Bateman, other guys.
Tyler Johnson, Chris Ottman-Bell.
Ottman-Bell, the hyphenated name. That was the one I was forgetting. It's gonna be hard to break that threesome, right? Like that starting threesome. Like that's going to be a tough rotation to break into.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for somebody like Eric Gibson where, he's coming off a redshirt year. PJ Fleck kind of talked him up. We'll get into that a little bit later. But every one of your receivers from last year is back. And Tyler Johnson, who's your single season record holder in a couple different areas now, is going to have an opportunity to chase some career receiving records at the university. You have Chris Ottman-Bell going into his sophomore year now, knowing that he can make it through an entire season without having the injury bug hit. You have Rashad Bateman coming into his own as a sophomore. He's going to have a big year. That we'll talk about here this offseason. And then you have Demetrius Douglas as your four. So the question is, how hard is it going to be to get playing time at receiver?
Right.
I think it's been pretty damn tough. You look at the battle for wide receiver five right now, Seth Green, of which I just remember a couple weeks ago, I got into an interesting discussion with a gentleman on Twitter when I called Seth Green a receiver, and he argued, no, Seth Green's still a quarterback because he took reps there. And I was like, sir, that's not how that works to an extent. He was a wildcat quarterback who threw the ball three times and ran it like 80 times. If anything, you should call him a running back if that's your stance. And that man died on that hill. And Seth Green last year in 2018, 90% of the meetings that Seth Green went to were receiver. 10% of them were at quarterback. And even when they were at quarterback, he was not in the quarterback meeting necessarily with the other quarterbacks. He was in his own individual session with Kirk Soraka going through some of the play calls that he was going to have in Seth Green's specific wildcat package. Now, Seth Green wants to evidently and obviously get reps at receiver. Well, who are you taking reps away from? Tyler Johnson? Not a chance. That's where Seth Green is going to have to really, really work on the nuances of the receiver position with route running and different things like that if he's going to take that next step.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I just don't really know. I mean, it's always good to have depth, but I just don't see where guys are going to get a ton of playing time unless, they're going to try and run some really pick up the pace in terms of the number of plays that they're running. But, I mean, give me a few other guys, who maybe could get run. I know you've talked about, you already mentioned Eric Gibson, that PJ's hyped him up a little bit. Who are other guys that we should know at this position group that are going to be battling to try and crack that starting trio?
Well, they're young guys, and they still have some time to do some things. And before I kind of get to them, I do want to talk a little bit about Rashad Bateman, Minnesota's single season, I think, freshman receiving record guy. And I know that I've gotten the question on Gopher Illustrated, and I've gotten the question on Twitter, like, what should we expect from Rashad Bateman in year two? Well, I know that the big thing that some on the Gopher staff want him to work on isn't necessarily even on the football field. It's really in the weight room, where you saw last year as a true freshman, he could get knocked off his routes at some different points. Especially Rashad Bateman's role in 2018 was being a deep threat. Yes, he could take a slant to the house, but they really wanted Tyler Johnson to be the short to intermediate guy, Chris Ottman-Bell, Rashad Bateman, be your deep threats. Well, Rashad Bateman is going to be going deep down the field. He's going to have to get stronger, both in his lower body, his upper body, everywhere. Because once that ball gets close, if you were to go back and even watch in the bowl game where Tanner Morgan's taking some shots down the field to Rashad Bateman, he's letting the defensive back lean into him and push him where he wants to. You can't let that happen, especially as you get later on into your career. So if Rashad Bateman is able to put on 10 good pounds this offseason while maintaining his speed, it could be a very fun season for Minnesota's wide receiver core. Then you mentioned those other young guys. I mean, Eric Gibson being one that PJ Fleck talked about in his press conference. Minnesota this past week, in terms of last week, you know, March 4th to the 9th, they were doing their testing, their final test for the spring. And Eric Gibson was one of the guys that tested off the charts. They did kind of an NFL combine type of thing where they maxed out on bench squat. They measured them in terms of arm length. They ran 40s, three cone vertical. Eric Gibson was one that had significantly improved. Now, the issue is, I mentioned it again, where is Eric Gibson going to slot in here? Because you're not getting reps from Johnson, Bateman, Chris Ottman-Bell. In Minnesota, yes, they're a 11 personnel team, of which that means you have three starting receivers, you have a tight end, then you got a running back. Where is he going to slot in there? Now, is there absolutely a chance for him to kind of earn that wide receiver 5 or 4 potential role? Sure. I think that could happen. But for Eric Gibson, it's going to be about route running. That was the big thing about him last fall, is how can his route running continue to evolve? And if he can continue to work on that, I think that's going to be a big step for him. Now, Jornell Mann's another one that I know I was high on, the Minnesota staff was high on. Well, unfortunately for Jornell Mann's, he tore his ACL in practice last year. And he's not going to be ready to go for the spring. Another guy that you're going to see rehabbing on the side there. And then I think another wide receiver name where it's getting to the point now where it's time to make some waves is Harry Van Dyne. He's going into year 3 in the Gopher program. He's going to be – so this is spring of year 3 for him. He's a redshirt sophomore going to be this fall. Where do you slot in, Mr. Van Dyne? You are 6'4". You're very athletic. His freshman year was derailed by a broken collarbone. He also, I believe, had mono at some point during in there, so that was kind of a wash for him. But you have younger guys that are playing above you, and you're only losing Tyler Johnson next year. So where do you slot in? So I think it's going to be a big spring for Harry Van Dyne if he's going to be able to work into the mix, because if not, I think he's going to get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. You know, a position group that I think that people are wondering when are they going to get involved is tight end, right? We saw Jake Paulson get a touchdown. I believe that was in the bowl game. So that, you know, maybe that was a forecasting things to come in this 2019 season. But I know you've been really high on Devin Spanford, but tell me, what can we expect from this tight end group going into 2019?
I would say that I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Michael Brown-Stevens, another true freshman that's coming in at wide receiver, someone I was omitted when we talked about the wide receiver. If there was a wide receiver that Minnesota was extremely high on that could potentially make an impact this fall as a true freshman of the guys that Minnesota's bringing in, it'd be Brown-Stevens. I say that because I know that Kirk Charrock and Matt Simon, PJ Fleck, absolutely loved what they saw when they saw him in person at a satellite camp out in June, out in Ohio as well. And you look at the slot for Minnesota, well, Demetrius Douglas hasn't exactly done anything to run away with that job. Where Michael Brown-Stevens is as athletic, he's a very confident young man, someone that I'm going to be watching very closely here this spring to see if maybe Michael Brown-Stevens can be the slot receiver with Bateman and Johnson on the outside. But at tight end, Luke, I am all aboard the hype train for Jake Paulson and Brevin Spanford. Now, I'm not forgetting about Coe Keefe, not forgetting about Bryce Witham, but if there was one thing I saw on Gopher Illustrated, if there was one thing I saw on the Twitter machine, it was, why don't we throw to the freaking tight end? Okay. Colton Beebe is someone that I wish could have been healthy. The healthy Colton Beebe that I saw at camp when he earned his offer from Jerry Kill, he would have been a hell of an H-back. Unfortunately for him, knee injuries derailed his career. Bryce Witham, not exactly a receiving threat. You look at last year with Jake Paulson, he did catch his first touchdown against Purdue. He wasn't necessarily ready to contribute as much that I think he will be here in 2019. And then you also add in essentially a converted wide receiver in Brevin Spanford, who's also 270 pounds now, a Division I basketball player recruit from St. Cloud Tech. I mean, someone I've been talking about on Gopher Illustrated for a long time, he was the top in-state recruit in 2018. just someone that you hear about, you know, in terms of being compared to Noah Fant, potentially TJ Hockenson. You look at what Iowa was able to do with those guys. They're extremely athletic guys. Brevin Spanford is all of 6'6", 6'7", 270 pounds, very, very athletic. Someone that I know from talking with different coaches on the staff that they've been very excited to use him for a long time. He played in 4 years he played in four games in 2018. Now he's going to be unleashed. He's just going to see some targets finally going to the tight end. And then with Jake Paulson, again, I think folks kind of forget that, you know, Jake Paulson coming out in 2017, was one of the more highly sought after tight end recruits in the country at that time. I know that LSU was very heavily involved. Some different Big 12 teams were very heavily involved. Well, Jake Paulson last year played at 245 pounds. Jake Paulson, I also believe, was arguably the most improved tight end from August 1 to January 1. Watching Jake Paulson block early on in fall camp, it wasn't great. It was not great at all. And then to watch him do what he did in the bowl game against Georgia Tech, which was multiple times flattened defenders, that's a kid who's got some confidence now. He's also, according to PJ Fleck, put on 15, 20 pounds, and he's in the 260s. So you have some receiving threats at tight end with Jake Paulson and Brevin Spanford that I'm very excited to see this spring. But I also don't want folks to kind of forget about Kokeef and Bryce Witham. They don't have a sexy role. They are the end-of-the-line blockers. Now, Kokeef has to prove that he can stay healthy consistently throughout an entire spring ball and then consistently throughout an entire fall camp. But when Kokeef is healthy, he's a nasty blocker. He is a very nasty blocker. And then with Bryce Witham as well, I think you're going to be able to see him potentially rotate in as that tight end four as well.
All right. So I see I'm looking at the show notes, and you have a note about what to do with Nate Umlor and Nathan, is it Birch?
Yes.
The fact that I knew Nate Umlor was a defensive tackle and now he's in the tight end group probably says more about me than it does about Nate Umlor. But what's going on here, man?
That's the question. Is in Kirk Shiraka's offense especially, you saw at different points last year, Minnesota did go 13 personnel with one running back, three tight ends. But that's because Colton Beebe was such a devastating blocker. Well, now you have a couple of guys in Jake Paulson and Brevin Spanford to kind of combat with Kokeef and then Bryce Witham mixing in as well. Where are you going to use these guys? I mean, what are your roles in this program? Two guys that are going to be going into year three. Nathan Birch from Woodbury High School started as a tight end, then kind of went to O-line for a while. Now he's back at tight end. I'm not tremendously optimistic about his future in terms of being a contributor. And then with Nate Umlor, it's unfortunate for him. Is he was forced to play as a true freshman, because Minnesota had no depth on the defensive line. So then last year he redshirts to get that year back. Okay, well, he's played a couple of years at defensive line. Now he's going to go back to tight end, where once again, I've talked about the Paulsons, the Spanfords, the Keefs, the Withams. This isn't a team that – this isn't Wisconsin. This isn't power set after power set after power set. This is a three-wide receiver base team now. So if you're tight end five or six and you're going into year three and you have two younger guys or that are already above you, it's going to be an interesting spring for those two. I think they're going to have to make some waves if they're going to want to carve out a role this fall.
All right. I know you're excited to talk about offensive line. I know you always leave the best for last. So I got to be honest. How excited are you? Just quantify it for me if you could.
How excited am I about offensive line? As excited as I've been in a long time. I remember talking about things this time last spring. I think it was a hot take at the time that I felt as good about an offensive line. I thought that Minnesota's offensive line was the spot I felt most comfortable with. Now, it didn't look like a good take early on, but Brian Callahan was able to massage things and get those boys running very, very good and very, very right towards the end of that 2018 season. I mean, you saw Minnesota dominating up front. Yes, they lose Donnell Green, two-year starter at left tackle. They were able to finally get Jared Weiler healthy for an entire season. I think that's a big kudos to Brian Callahan. And for the first time in 5 years, you're going to have an offensive line group that's going to have this the first time that they've had the same offensive line coach in back-to-back years. for four straight years, Minnesota had four different offensive line coaches. Let's see if Ryan can name them. Matt Limegrover. Do you also like how I'm talking in the third person now? This is where we're at.
I got one, Bart Miller. Bart Miller.
Yep, Matt Limegrover, Bart Miller, Ed Warner. Brian Callahan was number four. So this is the first time that these guys have had the same voice, same blocking scheme, same technique. They know what to expect. And I think that there's a lot to be said for that when you're dealing with 18 to 22-year-old individuals. They need consistency. They need the same voice telling them what to do. And you look at this offensive line group, in theory, Luke, we'll get into it, the 2019 starters should all be back for the 2020 season, and that is something I'm tremendously excited about.
All right, so when we look at offensive line, a name that we talked about pretty extensively coming into last spring was Jason Dixon. He was going to be coming during the fall, if I remember correctly. And now all of a sudden he redshirts, and now he's coming back. Where does he kind of slot in? What kind of role does he play?
I think he is your front runner at left tackle right now. Now, we'll get into Fleck being coy about some things on the offensive line with combinations and whatnot. But Jason Dixon is someone that Minnesota had high expectations for. And then Jason had to take an academic redshirt, meaning that he couldn't play any games last fall because he had to make sure that the academic side of things were taken care of before the athletic side of things were going to come into play. Jason Dixon is now all set on the academic side of things. And from what I heard last year when they talk about Minnesota talks about that Sunday scrimmage, it was essentially for the practice squad guys. They would be able to get to play in a game, or guys that didn't play a lot on Saturday still get their reps in. Was Jason Dixon was really turning it on in November in terms of the light looked to be going on. He looked to be the guy that Minnesota signed. Now the question is, can Jason Dixon continue that momentum through the winter here and really bring it into spring ball? Because at left tackle, he's going to have competition. Because Blaze Andrews, I thought, played pretty well there in the bowl game. Now, P.J. Fleck has mentioned, or he mentioned in his opening presser, that they don't know what they're going to do on the offensive line. Is Jason Dixon a guard or a tackle? Is Sam Schluter a guard or a tackle? Is Blaze Andrews a guard or a tackle? Is Curtis Dunlap a guard or a tackle? Is Connor Olson a center or a guard? Look, he's being coy about it. And again, that's what head coaches have to do, and it is what it is. I still think that when you go to practice, if you're going tomorrow, March 15th, I think your starting group is probably going to be Jason Dixon at left tackle. You'll have Blaze Andrews left guard, Connor Olson at center, Curtis Dunlap at right guard, and then Daniel Falele at right tackle. All those guys are juniors or below. All those guys could be your starters come 2020. But for Jason Dixon, it's going to be about you're older than most of those guys. I think Jason Dixon's a couple year older. Are a couple years older than you would expect from a redshirt junior coming out of high school. He, I believe, took a year or two off to go home and work for his family because his family doesn't come from the best financial situation back home. And then he went to a junior college. Now here he is. You're older. You should be stronger. And you have to be ready to go if you're Jason Dixon. But I understand that Fleck has to be coy about some of these offensive line combinations.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of his MO, right? Like, he is pretty coy about a lot of things, and he tries to be deceptive. I don't know if it really gets him anything here in the spring, but he is, if anything, he's consistent. He's consistent with his culture, and he's consistent with being coy. All right, so let's talk a little bit about who you're going to expect. If Fleck isn't saying it, what do you expect to see, maybe rounding out the starters?
I think that you're going to finally see that IMG Academy right side of the offensive line. I think you keep Curtis Dunlap at right guard. You keep Daniel Falele at right tackle. And you let them start there for the next 2 or 3 years before hopefully they're going to the NFL. I think that you keep Blaze Andrews or you slide him to the left side. I mean, I'm biased because Blaze Andrews is an actuarial science major. That was something that I was into my first 2 years. Of college, and unfortunately now I'm a sports management major and I'm through Calc 4. I know how smart that Blaze Andrews is, and I know that he's not going to have any issue going from right guard to left tackle to left guard. He's a very athletic young man. He's a very smart young man. And then I think that you move Connor Olson back to center now that he is a redshirt Jr., man, I'm getting old. I remember him in his Monticello days going to watch him play. And then hopefully Jason Dixon can assert himself and win that left tackle position. But I think the more interesting part is who's behind him. Because you have seen that a couple of guys from the 2018 class in Grant Norton and Jack York have decided to transfer, two big tackle bodies that Minnesota was hoping for. Jack York just didn't pan out. He saw the writing on the wall that I don't look like Curtis Dunlap. I don't look like Daniel Falele, Blaze Andrews. And he's going to transfer back to be closer to home. He's going to go to Stephen F. Austin in Texas, where he's from. Best of luck to him. And I don't think Grant Norton is playing football anymore. So it just happens to be that you're a teenage boy. You decide it's not right for you. But the reality is you have to figure out who's the tackle now. So I think a tackle, is this finally where Kyle Sasek can show up? He's got 2 years now into the program. He's going to be a redshirt sophomore here this fall. He's 2 years in. There's been a lot of high expectations for him. Sam Schluter evidently and obviously wasn't that great for Minnesota last fall. So can Kyle Sasek come in and hopefully be the backup right tackle, Sam Schluter the left tackle? On the inside, is this where Austin Beyer is a redshirt freshman can come in and potentially help? I think John Michael Schmitz is a sophomore. He's going to be your backup center. But then that also leaves someone like Ben Davis, where Minnesota signed him late going into the 2017 fall camp. And he hasn't done a whole lot. So, I mean, you're looking at a couple of guys that should be playing like they have something to prove here this fall. And that's going to be in Kyle Sasek and Ben Davis.
All right, so to round out kind of the offense as a whole, I think optimism's still really high, right? You're getting back some pieces that you basically missed all of last year or a good portion of last year. You have some experience at quarterback. Wide receiver and offensive line have probably never looked brighter in the last, I don't know, 5 years of the program. And I guess I'm just curious, are you still as high, you know, as you were on this offense 6 weeks ago as you are right now?
Once you get Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks back, yes. Now, again, that comes back to the take where Mo Ibrahim is a very good inside zone runner. Can he continue to improve it? He's a young man. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's going to be a redshirt sophomore. Can he become more elusive? Can he become a guy that Kirk Shiroka feels comfortable running something besides inside zone with? Absolutely. But where they're at in their careers, Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks have proven that I think they can do more things in the passing game. Some different runs, running schemes, some different things like that. But if Minnesota can just get average play from quarterback, I mean, we're talking about an offense that returns three of their five starters in the offensive line, all their receivers, they get back two of the most prolific running backs in Gopher football history, in my opinion. And then you also add in Brevin Spanford to your tight end room. I mean, you should be cooking with fire here pretty quick. So, I think the biggest thing where what would I deem a successful spring for this offense? How about everybody stays healthy? I don't want to report that there's another ACL tear. We've talked about the number of ACL tears that the skill position guys are dealing with. Rodney Smith, Chandler Brooks, Jornell Manns, Trey Potts. And that's just off the top of my head. That shouldn't be the way that it is. So if Minnesota can just stay healthy, I'm still going to be as optimistic as I've ever been. About this Gopher offense in terms of since I started covering the team in 2011.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for this offensive kind of preview, overview for spring ball. I want to thank everybody for listening. We should have some hopefully interesting news here pretty soon. We'll record a couple more podcasts during the spring as well. So we want to thank everyone for listening. I don't know, Ryan, you got any last words before we let everybody go?
No, just a reminder to folks that spring practice for terms of with the public starts tomorrow, March 15th, 4:45 at the new indoor. If you're not able to make it, I'd encourage, if you're not already, it's $1 for the first month to join Gopher Illustrated. If you want to get your practice reports, see what the guys look like for photo galleries, get all the videos and everything, head to gopherillustrated.com. If not, we'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk about spring practice reports and kind of get into a little bit more of the Gopher defense loop.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and go Gophers.